The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Terry Crosby.
And I'm Andy Steiger.
Welcome, Andy.
Well, boys, it's good to be here.
Andy's probably listening to this. If this voice sounds familiar, it's because it is somebody that you've heard before.
It is familiar.
Yeah, we have Daniel Markin back in the house.
Yeah. For all you don't remember, I'm Andy's intern.
Yeah, slave. AKA bond servant. Yeah,
bond servant working off. Yes.
For the next couple weeks still, well, this week and next week, Andy isn't going to be available. So we thought it'd be good to have Daniel back and have him pitch in on some issues that we're going to talk about. Do we have something from the dark corners of the internet, Terry, to get us started?
We do. And because Daniel's here, I wanted to get his take on all this. The death of the dinner date.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. These days, nobody wants to go on dinner dates.
Hmm.
What's contributing is everybody dating online, right?
Ah.
So when you date online, you could get five people saying, yes, I'd like to take you out, but they don't want to pay that much money every time, right?
That's right. Dinner prices have gone way up.
Yes.
Like, I went away from school and I came back and you're like, it's common to pay $17 for a burger here now.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, let's go have a nice evening and eat hamburgers.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at $40 plus tip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
coffee's much cheaper.
Coffee's much cheaper.
And there's some very nice coffee places out there.
There are some nice coffee places. There are some hipster coffee places. There are some more mainstream coffee places. And depending on the kind of vibe you want, you can get that. But I think the rationale between what I've heard of the coffee is it shows like interest if they're able to have a conversation with you for like a good hour, maybe a half hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
If they could actually maintain a conversation, then that's a good thing. Because if they sit there and there's no conversation, there's nothing, then it's like, well, good thing that cost me $6 instead of 40.
Speaking of marriage and dating life and stuff like that, I never really had a thing for Asian gals. And sure enough, I married a Caucasian woman, right? And, you know, the Korean culture is very homogeneous. And so my sister-in-law once told me before I got married that it would be nice if I'd marry a Korean gal so that, you know, she can kind of connect with her better and all that kind of stuff. And so what about you, Terry? I know you're like, you've got that half Cree kind of thing going there.
Cree.
I am Cree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
How much Cree are you, Terry?
Half.
Wow.
Yeah.
And your mother is full.
My mother is full Cree, and our reserve is in Quebec.
Wow.
Waswanapi. Give a shout out to Waswanapi.
Let's all take a moment of silence to think about Waswanapi. No. Did you get like, so this is growing up, they had, they're like First Nations. Is that that's what they were called? And in elementary school, you'd always hear on the bell, "Hey, there's going to be a pizza lunch in the multipurpose room for the First Nations kids." That is all. Boop. And seriously, growing up, I'm so jealous of every First Nations kid because it seemed like every week they got free pizza. Did you get free pizza growing up?
I did not get free pizza. They did not have that program.
But they cover
up
your education, though, do they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
nice.
If you are status.
Right.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
What was it like growing up being half Cree and things like that? Like, were you bullied at school? Do you remember have you experienced any sort of racism on the individual level?
I wouldn't say growing up in school at all. Like, I really just don't look as native as I think my older brother as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would experience it with my mom. If we were out somewhere, like in stores or, you know, at coffee shops or whatever like that. Like,
give us an example.
I mean, a lot of times it was people watching her, you know.
Just the stairs.
Just the stairs. Yeah. Following, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm. There was points where people would come up to her and say not nice things you know?
Yeah. Hmm.
So it was, I did see it at that level because, you know, my mom is very much native looking for sure.
Right.
And,
yeah, I've seen pictures of her. She does look very native. Yeah.
So, I mean, I did experience it at that level with her. Yeah. My mom went through the residential schools and experienced all that. That was interesting part of life with her as well. You know, I mean, that was not talked about a lot, but, that was a big hurt and within her for sure growing up. You know, my heritage in that way, I take a lot of pride in it. I really do. We used to go back to our reserve. We used to go back to my grandma and grandpa on the reserve, and they'd take us into the bush and just do a lot of fun things. We never were able to speak to my grandma and grandpa because they never spoke English.
Mm.
But there was a lot of laughter, a lot of fun, a lot of, you know, interaction with my cousins and stuff like the aunts and uncles that did speak English and telling us what grandma and grandpa were saying. But they were Christians. They were, you know, loved God. So that was a very great growing up piece with them.
Yeah. I've experienced, I guess, my share of racism too. When I first came here, I didn't speak a word of English really, and I went to school and I had a hard time adjusting for the first little while. And then every now and then you would have these kids, right? Like, and it was usually the white kids. And I'm not saying all white kids were like this, and I'll talk a little bit more on this later. But for example, I'd be, you know, this is like there's General Assembly or whatever. We're all gathered in the gym and I'd be kind of sitting, kind of squatting right on my feet, you know, bum off the floor kind of thing. I'm just kind of squatting there. And this kid from behind me just pushes me over and I look over, I'm like, what the? And the kid puts his hands together and does this bow thing, this Chinese bow thing to me, right? I'm just like, you little piece of, right? Did you just do that to me, right? Yeah, but I said something a lot more colorful in Korean at the time.
Oh,
which,
my goodness.
I mean, the kid didn't understand. But little things like that.
Yeah.
Now, whether the kid is a racist or not, I mean, I don't know. But that act was, to me, an act of racism. Now,
it's pretty aggressive, too. Mm-hmm. Right? For a younger kid to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? Like, I mean, Daniel, you're the typical talking point from our friends on the left side of the political spectrum, right? You've got the white privilege. You're the
dude. I have the white privilege,
but
I've had it easy.
The white mullet.
Yeah, I had a mullet in high school.
Daniel does have a mullet. He's bringing back the 80s with a vengeance.
That's right, dude. I was born in the wrong era.
Yeah, totally.
I was. No, so I'll say in high school, and even growing up through elementary school, I never experienced any racism, and nor did I see a ton of racism happen, which was quite unique. I went to a school growing up, like, for example, with Asian kids. We tended to like them a lot, and I don't remember having any friends who disliked them. If anything, there were stereotypes that they were better at math than us, and that was more or less as far as the jokes went.
Which, by the way, is not true. Like, this guy, this Korean kid, barely passed math 12, yo.
Yeah, so there you go. And so that was just kind of the joke. But we had Asian friends, like one of my friends growing up, David, he was Asian. But he would play the own stereotypes on himself and just say, oh, I'm so Asian and stuff like that. And we all had fun. And we never thought twice about it. And my high school also had a lot of Indo-Canadian kids, I think almost 60% Indo-Canadian. Wow. And we didn't think twice about it.
Yeah.
So I only started to kind of experience racism when I went to the States and I was studying in Chicago. Now, I was on the north side, and I wasn't on the south side where it's predominantly African-American. But what I tended to notice, which is something very fascinating to me, is not necessarily that side of racism, but I would say I experienced almost reverse racism, which is such a, I guess, you could say a white privilege thing to say. Oh, of course you experience reverse racism. But on my campus, to be a white male was to be the scumbag of the earth. And it was like the unforgivable sin. And I was sitting here, like, I'm a Canadian, so I'm an outsider. So I don't know any of your guys' history on this, but all of a sudden I'm kind of being seen as this bad person. I'm not allowed to have opinions. I'm not allowed to speak a voice, because any voice I have is a voice of this white privilege.
Of oppression. See, I think racism is that kind of a thing where you could easily have it flipped over. I speak as a visible minority. I'm like, yeah, sure, I've experienced racism, but I realized that I could be just as racist. I see, when I first came to Canada, up to that point, all the exposure that I had to the Western world was through Hollywood. Mm. So I come to Canada with this mindset.
What age were you?
I was 14 at the time. Okay. So I came here with the mindset, and I've told this story before, you know, white people are racists, like supremacists, and black people are thugs, and Asians are just kind of caught somewhere in the middle. First Nations wasn't even really a solid category in my mind. It was just this very vague Indian. It was just not non-entity to me at the time. And then I go to school, and my first encounter with a white kid, you know, I had this encounter with much trepidation. This kid turned out to be super nice, and most kids were like that. But I realized, though, this is what happened. Remember that story early about the kid that pushed me over and then did this Chinese salute thing, right?
Yeah.
Again, like that to me was an act of racism, but again, I'm not sure that kid is racist. And why do I say that? I mean, for all I know, the kid is just being stupid. Because I see the kid later doing something nasty to other white kids, other black kids, other First Nations kids. The kid is just an all-around jerk.
Could he have just saw this from older people? You know what I mean? Like, you know,
something he
learned from somewhere else from older people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to see a young kid like that racist,
right,
in a sense, right?
I started thinking, and this is where I kind of landed for now, I guess. Let's say I walk into a store, okay, and there's some sketch part of town, and this lady starts following me around, just like your mother experienced, right, Terry?
Yeah.
So this lady follows me around. Now, is this lady racist for following me around? And how would I know that? And that's where I started thinking. I'm like, how would I know that she was actually doing this as a racist thing? And I realized, well, I really can't know unless she says something really like racist to me. I'm not sure how I would find out that she's a racist unless I saw her doing this sort of thing to, say, Asians over and over again, but not to other groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
I have a much better chance of knowing, that she is a racist and she's doing this out of some kind of racist motivation.
Now, there is a name for that, isn't there? Racial profiling. Because that came up a lot in Chicago, where it would be people, a lot of my African-American friends and professors and stuff would get, you know, pulled over just because they were black and they were driving a car. One of the professors, he drives a Mercedes, and he was like one of the deans, and he kept getting pulled up, and he said, "I'm being racially profiled because, you know, you're not supposed to see a black man driving a Mercedes."
I think it was just yesterday, Wyclef Jean, do you know who he is, the singer, rapper? Wyclef Jean got pulled over the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Got taken out of his car, handcuffed, manhandled, and he went, you know, public with this. But yeah, it happens all the time, right? It continues to happen.
So is it racist then?
I guess that's the question, right? I think we got to be careful. See, what I experienced was that sometimes racism is really there, right? But other times it's not. It's just my projection. So for example, I watched a documentary about Korean students studying overseas. This documentary was kind of zeroing in on their struggles, you know, adjusting to life overseas. And they were showing this one student, Korean student, studying in Sydney, Australia. And he apparently got into a fist fight with a couple of white guys or whatever. And so the police officer comes over. And one of the things that he asked this Korean student was, "Have you been drinking?" Now, this Korean student took that to be a very racist thing. He's a white police officer. You know, I just fought a couple of white guys, and now he's trying to cover for them and put the blame on me. So he's asking me if I've been drinking. And if I were to say yes, then he would say, "Well, you started this." And that's how he interpreted it. But me, I'm watching this going, "Are you kidding me?" That's the kind of question that a police officer would ask anybody.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter whether you're Asian, white, or black, or purple, or green. The police officer is just trying to figure out what happened there. And so when I saw stuff like that, and this documentary was portraying this as a racist thing, and I was just like facepalming, right? I'm like, no, that's not fair to the police officer. I mean, the police officer might be racist, I don't know, but you can't deduce that conclusion from just the fact that he asked this Korean student, "Have you been drinking?" And so sometimes it's what you perpetuate. You're the one perpetuating this, like, because I know I was perpetuating that racism in my head. But again, that's not to deny that there are instances where, you know, just like your was it the dean?
Yeah.
Like getting pulled over in Mercedes just because he's black and he owns a Mercedes.
Well, and it's interesting because I would love to hear if there's any police officers who listen to this or someone who works in law enforcement listens to this podcast to hear what they like to have them email in and say, because I've often, the way I came to understand is, okay, there's probably a fair amount of racism within policing. Mm. Like I totally can understand that. There's tons of racism everywhere. Like to some extent, I think we're all racist. We all have a little bit of racism in us. And that can just be prejudice too. Maybe we never actualize it, but in the back of our mind, when, you know, maybe you see a large African-American man coming towards you, you might think for a minute, you know, something racist. Maybe you don't act upon it. Maybe you do. My thought, though, has always been if you have a lot of crimes as a police officer that are taking place in specific neighborhoods, perhaps, with a specific race of people, is that racist to say, there seems to be a pattern here, and to follow the pattern? Because I've always wondered if people, maybe the left, call it racial profiling, but would police officers call it, you know, we're searching for patterns, and this is tends to be the pattern that we notice. That's why we're more likely to check. What do you guys think about that?
To me, it makes sense. I'm just trying to parse it out between, like, just looking at it from the police officer's perspective and trying to look at it from the perspective of the person who's actually getting, you know, searched on and all that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. From the police officer's perspective, yes, it does make sense. I'm thinking, you know, if something were to happen, let's say, you know, North Korea goes berserk, right? And they start doing all kinds of like really terrible things that, well, things that are far more terrible than what they're doing now, and they're wreaking havoc all over the world. I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden, you know, customs and things like that, the security at international airports and things like that started like targeting Koreans, mm-hmm. whether South or North or whatever, like just because, well, we look the same, right? And we speak the same language, you know, that sort of thing. In a sense, it makes sense to me because there's higher probability, given the pattern, there's a higher probability that this specific group of people, regardless of their race, mm-hmm. the specific group of people, you know, that's where the trouble is coming from. Having said that, on the receiving end, I would be so happy because I know I'm innocent and I'm just getting lumped in with the group. It's just one of those things where I think it's that it is just what it is to me, mm-hmm. you know, like this is happening to me. Yes, I get it. Doesn't mean I'm happy about it, but I get why this is happening. How does that sit with you, Terry?
I mean, I think I agree in the same respect. I mean, it's there. That's a tough job for the police officer to go in and not have these preconceptions in their mind about a person that's in front of them, right? Whether it's black, whether it's native, because there's a lot of ideas there, right? They have to take that apart, disassociate themselves from that. But we're human. We can't that much, you know? Mm-hmm. It's hard to do that.
So how do we then try to like dismantle racial stereotypes and things like that? I think one thing that helped me overcome my sort of inner racism, if you will, was just spending time with people that I didn't really know. You know, I had this prejudice against white people. What helped me get over that was to actually get to know them, actually spend time with them, actually visit them in their homes and see how they live. And so what I started noticing was that sometimes I used to get very offended when they made jokes about me being Asian. And then at some point, as I got to know them better, I realized they weren't just doing that with me. They were doing that with everybody, whether it was, you know, white, black, Asian, Latino, or whatever. And so one day I decided to do a little experiment. I started poking fun at my friends, my white friends, you know, about, you know, if they've made fun of me, poked fun at me about using chopsticks and things like that. I would make fun of them about how they can't use chopsticks or, you know, their forks and knives or whatever, right? And they would laugh about it. They thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
That's when it dawned on me. That's when something snapped inside of me. I'm just like, yeah, this is harmless. They're not trying to be racist to me. They're just, So remember back in the, I think, 80s, 90s, was it En Vogue?
Oh, the 80s, baby.
There was that song, you know, Free Your Mind. And then it says, be colorblind. There was this whole thing with be colorblind.
Well, Michael Jackson has a big one, black or white.
Black or white?
Doesn't matter if you're black or white.
Sorry, how? There we go.
There's some natives dancing in that one, too.
We're there.
In the video.
Oh, yeah, man. Awesome. Terry was there at a young age. If you go look at the video.
That's a good video.
You might or might not see Terry. Right.
But yeah, there was that whole colorblind movement. I appreciate that. I appreciate where they're coming from. I understand that. You know, like, don't all get wrapped up in, you know, the fact that somebody's black, somebody's white, somebody's, you know, First Nations or whatever. I get that. But I don't think that's going to solve anything ultimately, because when you are being colorblind to me, you're actually refusing to see a part of who I am.
Your culture.
Right.
Like, I'm refusing, I don't see color, Steve, mm-hmm. so don't worry, I don't see color. But then I'm refusing to acknowledge any of your culture.
You would be wrong to call me anything other than Asian, ethnically speaking, right?
Yeah.
And so that is a part of me. So what I wanted was for people not to be colorblind, but see the color, so to speak, see me as an enculturated being and celebrate that.
Yeah.
And one of the ways in which I do that is, especially between me and my wife, you know, we throw around these jokes. Every now and then on Facebook, I'll share, you know, Sharina's racist quote of the day or something like that. And I was kind of going through that. I was doing a little search and going through that a little while ago. And I think it was 3 years ago or something like that. I went to the kitchen. It was dinner time. I pulled out a fork and a knife or whatever, and I came to the table. But I noticed that Sharina had already pulled out a fork and a knife. So I'm like, okay, I guess I didn't see that. And then she goes, you really just kind of have to actually open your eyes and look, right? And I know it's kind of hard with your narrow eyes, right? Whoa. And then she comes over to me. She comes over to me, pinches my eyes open like this. And she's like, whoa, there's so much more to the world. Man, I was just like, she absolutely cracks me up. Now, if you were to do something like that to me when I was in like grade 9, grade 8, when I'm like fresh new to Canada or whatever, I would have been seething with anger. I actually chased a guy at one point, this Sudanese guy. He said something to me that really set me off, something racial, I think, if I remember correctly. And I actually picked up my chair and started like chasing him down. So my friends grabbed me. I was like, oh man, there were so many things that could have gone wrong, you know, that would have gotten me deported or something. I don't know. But now I have something like that happen to me and I laugh about it because I know it's harmless. I mean, after all, this woman married me, right? And so I know she's not a racist, even though what she does may have these racial connotations. To me, it is a way of celebrating our differences. So if I crack a lot of quote unquote racist jokes, it's not that I'm being racist. I'm just like, hey, you know what? We are different. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to deny that. We are different. But this is not something that needs to divide us. This can be something we can celebrate by laughing about together and actually be closer together that way.
I like your point on, you know, getting to know the person. I mean, that's huge within the native culture, mm-hmm. you know, that relational piece to it. I mean, that's huge. You shouldn't come to them, you know, prescribing, you know, they really want an interaction on a relational level more than anything before you start giving them prescriptive ideas or, you know, solutions or whatever like that. We really need to understand that with the native issues, you know, I mean, the church was a problem that started this with the natives way back with the residential schools and stuff like that. And as a church moving forward, I really think we need to just sit down and listen and that's hard for us to do, right? It's hard for us to learn their ways, learn their culture, learn, you know, their thinking, their ideas, because it's so different, so different than a Western culture, right?
Yeah.
But I think really that is a first step.
So what do you think about, for example, I know I was telling you a little while ago about what really set me off because I saw this video on Facebook about the living conditions of the First Nations people in, say, in northern Manitoba or something like that, where you'd think this was in some third world country. I'm like, this couldn't possibly be in Canada. But it is. Are there bugs crawling everywhere? They don't have sewage systems, so everything is going down like under their houses, and so they have to live with that stench, and like their walls are falling apart. I'm like, what is this, right? So when something like that is happening, obviously you want to bring some relief to that. Like, from your perspective, Terry, like, what would be the sort of the proper order of things?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one because, I mean, there's already been a lot of money put in to native help and care and stuff like that, right? The issue goes a lot deeper than just money. And a lot of the natives are still on reserves. I think we have just as big of a racist problem here than the blacks in America. But the natives are still on the reserves up north. I mean, if you go to Toronto, there's only like 40,000 natives living in that city. That's like less than 1% of the population there, right? So it's not as prevalent, but yeah, natives are still on the reserves in these horrible conditions. I've been reading even just in this last week that, you know, there is more steps being taken to get better housing for them. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole reconciliation process that's going on, that's a great way to get involved and going and talking and listening to the elders speak about this, mm-hmm. you know, get an idea of the trials and the hurts that they've gone through in the past. And like I said, it's a lot deeper than just the materials things.
Right. Daniel, you had something to say earlier?
Well, I was just wondering if the reason we're so caught up with the racial stuff, is that because of political correctness? Because, for example, like you mentioned, like your experience in Canada, they would laugh about it when you make fun of them. And to them, it's like, it's banter. And I guess racism... or race is I guess, maybe a topic of the banter, but it's not meant in a way to hurt or to maim a person. While it can, mm-hmm. it totally can, but it's... So, for example, like I went down to the States, and because in Canada we use so much more sarcasm, I was being sarcastic with everyone. And no one... Everyone for the first, like, 2 weeks, just, like, these blank stares, no one was laughing. I'm like, all right. Anyways, these people are like, why do you say this stuff? Like, everyone thinks you're so mean. And I'm like, are you kidding? I'm like this to everyone.
You're not like the normal Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. Because they have a stereotype that Canadians are just so nice, and meanwhile we're just ripping on everything.
Yeah.
Oh man. And yeah. And so, especially being like a jock and being from the athlete background, you know, everything we do is like making fun of one another. And
there's a lot of truth to what you say about the PC culture, because the kind of stuff that I laugh about race and things like that, there are certain places where I would never do that. For example, when I go to a university campus, that's one place where I don't do this kind of stuff because I understand how volatile this issue is, such that even just a little spark could cause a flame. But between me and my wife, or me and my best buddy, like Dan, like, I mean, he's the kind of guy who will, for example, cook for me and my wife. We come over or whatever. He has two bowls out. One bowl has Shrina's name on it. The other bowl has my name on it. And in Shrina's bowl, there's the spoon. And in my bowl, there's a pair of chopsticks. I'm like, awesome. He's like being so culturally sensitive. So what did you make, Dan? He's like, soup. but that kind of stuff, like we just laugh about. I mean, I took a picture of this. It was so funny, right? And I share it.
That's awesome.
Every now and then, for some people, this might be a really racist thing. But for me, having overcome, I guess, my what I call my inner racism, I'm like, this is something that I cherish because this is a way of him showing his affection for me. Yeah. And so there are contexts in which I freely do this sort of thing, talk about it, joke about it. I just can't do that at a university campus. I would never do that. Mm-hmm. And it also takes a little bit of getting to know somebody before I start. It's the same thing with just any kind of sarcasm, right? You don't want to start off with it unless you're a very special kind of person. I think I understand and I appreciate where political correctness is coming from for many people. They want to be polite. Yeah, I get that. Awesome. But I think, especially in universities, it's gone to the point where it's dangerous now, right? It's just not helpful.
I know we're running out of time probably.
Yeah.
But I mean, as individuals, and I think it comes down to individuals, what can we do, right, to go against, you know, the racism we see mm-hmm. all over the place, you know, in our culture? Right. I think it does come down personally and what I can do daily to help this issue. Any mm-hmm. thoughts?
Probably the best thing that I can leave our listeners with is, you know, be intentional about spending some time with somebody. Not just if there's somebody that you know at work, actually take the time to visit that person in their own home context and see what that person is like, you know, and as you get to know them more, like you might have a glimpse into what it is that they're saying about you and your group of people. When you get to know somebody well enough that these kinds of things start to surface, then you can have a really meaningful dialogue and maybe try to dispel some misperceptions that we may hold, right? And I think that's one critical thing. And I'm a big fan of laughing about certain racial traits and whatever, insofar as, you know, you don't take it too personally. Just laugh it off, have fun together.
I think for me, just real quick, would be speaking well of other cultures and like the things that you do like about them, let other people know you like that. So like man, I love Indian food. And so whenever the topic of Indian food comes up, I love to just praise how great it is. And there's aspects I love of their music. And, you know, I love talking about when you go to the Indian restaurant, they have the Bollywood movies. Like for me, I'm like, it is so fascinating to me. And I love watching these Bollywood music videos.
Yeah.
And so I think just you can speak about it in a way that's not, that's positive and that it actually shows you genuinely like it and it's not an issue for you. Or like, you know, I do enjoy Korean food and I find a lot of, you know, I've seen Korean TV shows and it's very interesting. And
you're truly blessed, my man. Thank you for joining us, listeners. It's time to wrap up. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about.